Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the fourth canto, 16th chapter. Chapter is entitled Praise of King Prithu by the Professional Reciters. Today's text is text 4. Esha Dharma Britam Shesto Lokam Dharme Yuvartayan Gupta Cha Dharma Setunam Shasta Tat Paripantinam Esha Dharma Bitam Shresto Lokam Dharme Nuvartayan Gupta cha dharma setunam Shasta tat paripantinam Esha dharma bitam shresto Lokam dharme nuvartayan Gupta cha dharma setunam Shasta tat paripantinam. It's Shasta. It's not Shastra, it's Shasta. It means the chastiser. Okay. Esha dharma pitam shesto. Lokam dharme nuvartayan. Gupta cha dharma setunam Shasta tat paripantinam. Please chant. This King Prithu, Dharma Britam, a person's executing religious activities. Shreshta, the best. Lokam, the whole world. Dharme, in religious activities. Anuvartayan, engaging them properly. Gupta, the protector. Cha, also. Dharma Setunam, of the principles of religion. Shasta, the chastiser. Tat Paripantinam, of those who are against religious principles. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The king, Maharaj Prithu, is the best among those who are following religious principles. As such, he will engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles and give those principles all protection. He will be a great chastiser to the irreligious and atheistic. Purport. The duty of the king or head of the government is described very nicely in this verse. It is the duty of the government head to see that people strictly follow a religious life. A king should be strict in chastising the atheist. In other words, an atheistic or godless government should never be supported by a king or governmental chief. That is a test of good government. In the name of secular government, the king or governmental head remains neutral and allows people to engage in all sorts of irreligious activities. In such a state, people cannot be happy despite all economic development. However, in this age of Kali, there are no pious kings. Instead, rogues and thieves are elected to head the government. But how can the people be happy without religion and God consciousness? The rogues exact taxes from the citizens for their own sense enjoyment. And in the future, the people will be so much harassed that according to Srimad Bhagavatam, they will flee from their homes and country and take shelter in the forest. However, in Kali Yuga, democratic government can be captured by Krishna-conscious people. If this can be done, the general populace can be made very happy. Esha dharma itam shreshto lokam dharme nuvartaya gupta cha dharma setunam shastata paripantana. This king, Maharaj Prithu, is the best among those who are following religious principles. As such, he will engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles and give those principles all protection. He will also be a great chastiser to the irreligious and atheistic. Om Agana Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umanitam Gena Tajmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The last two sentences in this purport really stand out. However, in Kali Yuga, a democratic government can be captured by Krishna conscious people. If this can be done, the general populace can be made very happy. This could be a good opening for launching a political campaign in the God We Trust Party. Actually, going back into the early 70s, Balavanta Prabhu and Amarendra Prabhu, they both ran for political office. Sadhu Prabhu's nodding his head in recollection. Once Sureshwar was telling me of how it went. He was in the Gainesville temple when Amarendra Prabhu was running for political office. I'm not sure what the office was. I think it was state legislature. And the whole temple got transformed into a base of operation for the political campaign. And, they were really into it. And as the campaign went on and the intensity of campaigning increased, devotees began to notice that they were neglecting fundamental parts of their sadhana practices. And they weren't distributing books. They were starting to skip the Bhagavatam class so they could get out on the street early and campaign. And Apparently the same thing happened with Balavantu, who I believe was running in Atlanta. And Prabhupada was encouraging initially, but then when they stopped distributing books and they started neglecting their sadhana practices, then Prabhupada finally put a stop to it and wanted everybody to go back to the normal program. However, this statement is here. However, in Kali Yuga, democratic government can be captured by Krishna conscious people. If this can be done, the general populace can be made very happy. So it does seem that Prabhupada had an aspiration and vision, and this actually takes place. And I could you know, begin to see how this would start to happen. You know, as I visit the various temples in India, and we see the level of recruitment that's taking place, not just, you know, with the IYF preaching, you know, at the universities. I heard a statistic that every day a new devotee joins ISKCON from the university preaching that goes on in Chopati. And that's not, I mean, in just a few days, there's going to be over 800 devotees. Where's our advance guard, Prabhu? From Pune, from the Pune IYF preaching. Or is it the Bhaktivedanta Academy for Culture and Education, the base program? there are going to be 800 devotees coming here. You know, there are different stages of development in their devotional service. I remember, I guess it was 3 years ago, Radhe Shyam brought 325 students. So it's, you know, logarithmically increasing. And you know, I just was recently in Delhi, and we started a course there with 147 students in three sections. And in our, in a kind of, there's an all brahmachari section, and there's one section of congregation devotees, and then another temple is a mix of brahmacharis and congregation members. But in the one congregation class in Delhi, we have the assistant general manager of Hyundai India, you know, the car manufacturers. I mean, super sharp person. And then also the chairman of board. It basically owns a company of Surya Light Bulb Company. Anytime you buy a light bulb, the chances are pretty good it would be a Surya Light Bulb or one of their subsidiary companies. And just the level of devotees, you know, their material qualifications. So it becomes more and more possible. You know, like in America, when these campaigns were going on in the God We Trust parties, most of the devotees were coming from the hippie culture, right? And, you know, they were some really sharp people. I mean, like Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was living in a tree just before he came, in a tree house, in a tree. And, I mean, you know, there's some pretty amazing leelas, you know, of how Prabhupada rescued these early devotees. But then, you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he went back to university after a hiatus of, what, 30 years. And he was had the highest grades in the history of Southern Methodist University in Dallas. And then he went on, he was working on his PhD at Cambridge University. So, you know, these people had a karmic trajectory, these early devotees and early leaders, whereby they would have taken a very leading role, you know, in the material realm. But here, now in India, there's an explosion of this recruiting. You know, I mean, it's very commonplace to see a humble brahmachari that has a gold medal from IIT Mumbai, you know, he's a gold medalist, you know, top of the class, or, you know, he's got a master's degree from IIT Mumbai, or, you know, this and that, or he was, one devotee that I'm working with in Delhi, you know, he was a professor of medicine before he became a brahmachari, you know, what a sharp person. So, there's hope, but, you know, that this can actually take place. That, you know, as the Abhut Mandir goes up and the waves of Krishna Prem inundate the world, you know, as Nityananda Prabhu predicted, you know, we can see the kind of the initial ripples of these waves of Krishna praying beginning with the recruitment that takes place in India. Now, Prabhupada, in the last sentence, if this can be done, the general populace can be made very happy. Now, oftentimes we see in our ISKCON temples, you know, which is directly under the administration of Krishna conscious devotees, we see sometimes devotees that aren't very happy. So it just seems almost like an anomaly. You know, the statement with Prabhupada, if the government becomes Krishna conscious, then everyone can be made very happy. So what's the disconnect? I mean, how can we understand this? So when I was thinking about giving this class, I immediately thought of Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion. And Rupa Goswami gives a very, very powerful and detailed description of the first characteristic of pure devotional service, which takes place on the stage of sadhana bhakti, and that's klesha agni. And that means to be freed from material distress. So, for those of us who haven't quite achieved that platform yet, either we're suffering from mental distresses or this distress or that distress, it may seem, well, gosh, how do I realize this in my life? So Rupa Goswami hasn't let us down, because he's given a very detailed description. First of all, he enters into a discussion of where suffering comes from. And suffering has develops from three causes. The root cause of all suffering and the root cause of the other two causes is avidya. This is ignorance. And I've got to speak louder, or I've got to put the microphone closer to my mouth. Is that what you're... Is a devotee giving me sign language? And I wasn't sure whether he was trying to tell me that I'm crazy, or... No, I'm not crazy. I just need to speak more into the microphone. So, the root cause of all suffering is avidya. From avidya comes bijam, material desires. So in other words, the first... Okay, let me go through the three causes. And then comes from material desire comes papam, the actual sin. And then from the sin comes the suffering. So if you are suffering, then you can trace it back to these three causes. Now, with the avidya that Rupa Goswami is describing, it's not an ignorance of who was the 32nd president of the United States. I'm American, I don't think I even know that one. But it's of sambandha gyan, you know, of our relationship with Krishna. Kavi Yogendra, in the 11th canto, 2nd chapter, describes what takes place when someone is in ignorance, when he misidentifies himself as his body. Vayam dviti yabini veshatashad ishari petasha viparyoshmiti tanaya yato huda abhajetan bhaktyaika yesham guru devatatma. So fear overcomes the living entity when he misidentifies himself as this material body. Now this arrangement is made by the external energy of the Lord, and when it takes place, he becomes completely bewildered. And he goes through Viparyayoshmiti. Prabhupada, in two places, in chapter 24 and Madhya 25, this verse is there, as well as in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada translates this as a role reversal. Rather than seeing oneself as Krishna's servant, one sees himself as Krishna's competitor. Now, earlier on in this pastime, when Vena was enthroned, I mean, this is a classic example. King Vena, he stopped all worship and wanted all the Brahmins to get out of Maya and worship him, because he was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is how Prabhupada translates, you know, the shlokas in this pastime. So, maybe to a less ostentatious degree, you know, the conditioned soul puts himself in this same kind of situation. He's under the illusion that he's actually the center of the universe, that the universe is there for his gratification. He's the primary enjoyer, and he's the primary controller. Now that's pretty powerful illusion when you really stop to think about it, but it's a very, very widespread. And think about it. Look back to the period in your life before you became a devotee. And take a snapshot of what your consciousness was like in those good old days. Yeah, what was it like? That was pretty much it. Right? No? No, yes. Okay. Depends upon what part of the world you come from. In India, in America, that means no. In India, it means yes. I agree. So, but it always confuses me when someone does that. So, you know, to the degree that we become free of this illusion and take up Krishna consciousness, and you know, the end of this verse by Kavi Yogendra is that, so an intelligent person, when he recognizes the role reversal that he's gone through, worships the Supreme Lord with undivided attention by accepting a guru as his worshipable Lord and his very life and soul. So this is how one undoes the damage that's created by falling under the sway of the material energy. Okay. So Rupa Goswami makes the point that when one takes up devotional service, all three of the causes of suffering begin to be dissipated. Okay, so the Sambandha Gyan part, study Prabhupada's books, some realization starts awakening. I'm not this body, I'm an eternal soul. Right? I mean, we may, you know, in the beginning, I remember my Bhakta leader saying, Bhakta Jim, you're not that body. You know, and it always used to agitate me, you know. And he just kept driving it home, you're not that body, you're not that body. And you know, I don't think I had so much realization of it, but you know, as the years roll by, you start, you know, particularly when the wrinkles start popping out and, you know, the organs in your body stop working so well, you know, and she's like, sure, I'm glad I'm not this body. You know, the hair starts getting gray. You want to shave up all the time so people won't know that you're getting to be an old man. But so the realization, you know, starts awakening, you know, that we are eternal. And, you know, from time to time when the ecstasy starts flowing in an ecstatic kirtan, nuestra understanding that we're Krishna's servant. Or we actually start doing some very intense service and guru to the guru parampara, and then we start getting reciprocation, you know, through the internal energy of the Lord. Srimati Radharani blesses us with the Ladini Shakti, you know, we experience this transcendental pleasure. And we can connect that with the service that we're doing. So then we start understanding, yeah, I'm actually a servant of the Lord. So that starts awakening. And then, you know, the desires, you know, when we see that, when we see this understanding, you know, kind of starting to become a more and more prominent part of our life, then we also can start to see a difference in the level of our material desires. We don't really care so much about fulfilling these things, you know, whether it be pratishtha or puja, or, you know, all the things that King Vena held near and dear, you know, let to speak of, you know, full-on gross sense gratification, you know, and becomes more and more pale as we develop this param drisvana vartate. You know, we get the higher taste in Krishna consciousness. It's actually the test of advancement. You know, that we start becoming a little detached from these things that used to just run roughshod over our lives and just completely control us. So there's a reduction of the material desire. And, you know, if someone comes into ISKCON and seriously agrees to follow the regulative principles, then sinful activity stops. So, you know, for those of us who have been in ISKCON for many years, I was hearing a discussion a few days ago, you know, about how some young people, they were going to the temple, but they were smoking marijuana, and they felt it was okay, they were happy with it, and it wasn't a big deal. So, why should we take following the regulative principles seriously? And, you know, we make a promise, but as we know, you know, when we take initiation, we make a promise, and, you know, Srila Prabhupada, I was just watching the initiation of Satchinandana Swami, you know, when he was, you know, just a bhakta taking, you know, first initiation from Prabhupada in a video. And, you know, Prabhupada's handing the beads, you know, and Satchinandana Swami was speaking his vows in Deutsch. It was actually a newscast. It made the movement look like a bunch of brainwashed zombies, you know. It was, but then we know, you know, we look at the history of ISKCON, and in a very, very small percentage of devotees, you know, over a course of many years, that remain loyal to these vows. Very, you know, I took a diksha. Ragatmaka Mataji, I think, was there when I took diksha in 1978. And there were 19 devotees that took first initiation. I think that I'm the only one that's still active. But that's not so uncommon. So that means like 5%, you know. I mean, we're talking about over a period of many years that stay with the process, even though there may be some slips and falls along the way, but actually stay with it, stay active, you know, within ISKCON. It's not. So it seems that it's important to understand how this whole process of sin, suffering, elevation in Krishna consciousness takes place. Now, kind of paralleling the verse that I quoted from the 11th canto, 2nd chapter, in the 7th chapter, 27th verse of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a description of the cause of someone falling under the sway of the material energy. Krishna says, Ichatvesha Samutvena, Dvandva Mohena Bharata, Sarvabhutani Samhoham, Sarge Yanti Parantapa. So overcome by the dualities of desire and hate, every living entity is born into this material world. So somehow or other, one becomes, it is initially an envy of Krishna. You know, this little blue boy, he's the cynosure of everyone's love and affection. And he's playing on his flute, the gopis are running after him. You know, why can't that be me? You know, this is what would be the word primordial? Psychological force of envy, you know, that I, you know, want to be Krishna. And we see King Vena, you know, he's full blown. You know, he was so an illusion, full on. I am the Supreme Personality of God. So that's that envy. And then Icha is the desire and Dvesha is the envy. So Icha, the desire to enjoy like the Supreme Lord. So that you know, kind of says basically the same thing as the Bhayam Duti Yabini Veshatashad verse. You know, that there's this role reversal, this Viparya Yoshmiti, that takes place when the jiva comes under the sway of the material energy. So then, in the next sloka, Krishna says, you'll have to, I memorized this one this morning, so please bear with me, you know, if I can't get through the whole thing. Please bear with me if I can't even remember the first line. okay. Yesha tvantam kata papam. Okay. Jananam punyakarmanam. Te dvandva mohan niryoga. Pajante mam jadavrata. How about that? No? For an old man with failing memory. Prabhupada translates that, for those who have acted piously in previous lives and in this lives, and whose sinful reactions are completely eradicated, they are freed from sinful reactions and all dualities. Who are freed from sinful reactions, they are freed from all dualities, and can engage in my service with full determination. Okay, let me do that. I didn't do so well in a translation. Let me try that again. I was focusing on the Sanskrit. But those who are who have acted piously in previous lives and in these lives, the current lives, and who are free from sinful reactions, whose sinful reactions are completely eradicated, they are freed from dualities and can engage in my devotional service with full determination. So then, actually, when this verse came up on a morning walk, one of Prabhupada's disciples said, but Srila Prabhupada, we didn't act piously. We don't know what we did in our last life, but at least in this life we didn't. You know, so how can we be taking up devotional service? And then Prabhupada said, I have created your piety. So, I mean, in one sense, you know, this is something that's unique about Kali Yuga. That, I mean, there's a pretty powerful discussion on this. I'll get back to this Bhagavad Gita 7:28, but let me digress a little bit and hit a very important point. That the 11th canto, 5th chapter, 32nd verse, there is a description Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sango Pangashta Parshadam Jagnai Sankitana Prayer Yajantihi Sumedasa. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons worship the incarnation of Krishna who's not blackish and who's accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions by congregationally chanting the holy name of the Lord. Okay, this is a very famous verse. And this, of course, is a prediction in the Bhagavatam of Lord Chaitanya's advent. And then, in the subsequent verses, it's really amazing what's described. And this really connects with the suffering that takes place in Kali Yuga. There's a description that in Satya Yuga, people, for the most part, are in the mode of goodness. They're extremely qualified. They follow all the religious principles. And Jiva Goswami describes how they wouldn't be satisfied with such a simple yuga dharma as vibrating in the name of the Lord with their tongue. They need something a lot more challenging, like, you know, twisting their legs behind the back of their neck, eating once a month, or, you know, restricting their breathing, you know, doing these very intricate pranayams. You know, and after 60,000 years of Astanga Yoga meditation, you know, they achieve the perfection, which the Acharya's comment is they can come to the platform of Dasya Ras. So, but in Kali Yuga, it's a different situation. People are suffering intensely. They're helpless because the whole environment is so degraded. People are so sinful, and as a result of their sinfulness, they suffer horribly. And because of the level of suffering and because of their helplessness, they can take shelter of the holy name with deep feeling. And interestingly enough, the sages of Satya Yuga, this is in the commentaries of the Acharyas, they worship Kali Yuga because the Yuga Dharma is so powerful and people can come to the highest platform of Krishna consciousness. Simply because, you know, because the Lord is very merciful and we see someone in such a helpless, suffering condition, chanting his name, he gives them mercy and he uplifts them. So, Prabhus, Matajis, don't worry. We've got some hope. You know, I mean, you know, it's a very, very powerful process that Lord Chaitanya has given us. But if you examine this section of the 11th canto, it seems that it's integral to the climate of suffering that takes place in Kali Yuga because of the rampant sinfulness. So then, does this nullify Krishna's statement in the 28th verse of the 7th chapter? And then it really connects with the regulative principles. And Prabhupada says that by following the regulative principles of freedom, then one can eventually become freed from duality and take up devotional service very sincerely and eventually come to the transcendental platform. So this brings up another whole discussion that Rupa Goswami pursues about the cycle of sinful reactions. And he quotes from the Padma Purana that there are actually four stages of the manifestation of suffering, of sinful reaction. Okay? First, there's aparabdha, karma. And this is unmanifest. Okay, we don't even know it's there. And then comes kutam. And then there's like a propensity for engaging in sinful activity, kind of a general propensity. And then comes bijam, which is a very, one becomes more specialized in how he's going to sin. You know, his desire becomes quite focused. The example could be that in a previous life, one was, big rascal, and he had the aparapta karma, he's a dishonest, thieving person. And so he took birth, and, gradually he developed, an impious demeanor in his life. You know, he just was attracted to sinful activities. But then the bijam, and then he said, well, I'm going to go in this store and steal this, and, becomes much more specific. And then from the bijam, comes the papa, the actual sinful activity. So, and then when the sinful activity takes place, then aparapta karma. Again, aparapta stage. Okay, so that comes in two ways. There's an aparapta that leads to parapta and manifests. Like, my birth is an example of parapta karma. It's fully manifested. I'm ugly. I'm stupid. I got so many things that I've got to overcome in this life. So many impieties that manifest. So when the sinful activity takes place, first stage is the aparapta karma. And so then the aparapta karma can go further and actually very quickly become parapta karma. We see examples all over the world of cigarette smokers. They smoke, they're breaking that regulative principle, and then they start coughing, then they get emphysema, then they get lung disease or lung cancer, and then they die. Really painful death. Maybe they have a lung removed, or they get cancer of the larynx. I had a high school friend whose father was a chain smoker and developed cancer of the larynx, the voice box, and so he had to have that removed, his larynx. And so there was a hole right here. And, with the larynx, of course, that's where the vocal cords are located. So he couldn't speak normally anymore. He spoke by belching. You know how when you're a little kid and you learn how to, swallow air and then belch? So that's how he learned how to speak. A very hideous sound. You ever tried to talk to someone by belching? I used to do that with my brother when I was about probably 10 years old. And so that's how he would talk. But, he was defiant. And just like King Vena was defiant. He was thumbing his nose at the material energy. And he actually he continued smoking. And sometimes he would even put the cigarette to the hole in his neck. Okay, so guess what happened, folks? The way he left his body, the cancer, continued because, he was determined. He had so much kutam and bijam, and, there was, no stopping. He went to the Catholic Church every Sunday and asked, went to confession, but, it wasn't a serious endeavor. It was like the babying of an elephant, so it didn't go so far. But he bled to death. The cancer ate into one of the major arteries in his neck. And he bled to death, and blood was just shooting from the hole in his neck on the way to the hospital. I'm sorry, I just wanted to make sure no one went to sleep. So that was, that was aparapta that became parapta in the lifetime, and it is fully manifest. Now, there's aparapta that goes another route, goes into kutam, sinful propensity. So, because he was sinning, with the smoking, the desire just, even though he went through this heavy reaction, it didn't wake him up. He kept smoking. So the Kutam was there, you know, from the up one form of Aparabdha, you know, evolves into Kutam. So the sinful propensity was still there, and the Kutam becomes Bijam, and the desire was still there. So it didn't, even though he got whacked, woke everybody up that was nodding out on that one. Even though he got whacked by the material energy heavily, it didn't stop him. It's the same thing. You know, we may do all kinds of austerities, and there's yogis that do that. I was looking in the, there was some university students that I took to, from the Juhu preaching, and I took to Yoga Peak yesterday and gave them a class. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Navadvip Dhamma Mahatmya, said that 3 days of residence in Sridhar Mayapur is the equivalent of the austerities that a yogi would perform for 10 years in one of the seven sacred cities. So, you know, it's very powerful, but why? You know, because the yogis, you know, like, look at, who is it, Vishwamitra Muni, you know, Menaka walks by, the ankle bells tinkle, poops, you know, and the guy, you know, falls down, and that's it, you know, he didn't, you know, because it wasn't, you know, the Kutam and Bijam, you know, hadn't gotten cleansed, you know, the sinful activity was stopped, and, you know, in the first chapter of the sixth canto, you know, at the beginning of the Ajamil pastime, there's a description. Sukadev Goswami is giving instruction to Maharaj Pariksit. You know, they've just gone through this whole description of the hellish planets. You know, and Maharaj Pariksit's inquiring, isn't there any way that we can stop people from going into such hellish suffering conditions? You know, so then first Sukadev Goswami, he actually is testing his disciple when he says, you know, by tapa, by brahmacharya, by all these austerities, you can do this. But then Maharaj Pariksit says, and then he gives the example of the bathing of the elephant, you know, I mean, and then, and also, it's just like when there's a forest fire, the leaves of the bamboo trees are burnt, but the roots are still there. You see this, you go on Parikrama out here, and then there'll be places where the earth is scorched, you know, from a little fire. And so the leaves are burnt, but the roots are still there. So that's kind of the prelude to this famous verse, Prabhupada would often quote, Kechit kevalya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agamdun vanti kartsneya niharami vabhaskara. That when one engages in pure devotional service, then the root of sinful desire is completely removed from the heart, the root cause, just as the sun dissipates fog by its rays. This is a really big discussion, but the point I'm making about the regulative principles of freedom, that if one again enters into sinful life as a devotee, he increases the kutam and the bijam. You know, he may, you know, apichet sudaracharo, he can go in, but the thing is that the mind becomes disturbed. Devotees who have been around for a while and have been strictly following, they notice that their capacity to chant attentive rounds increases as they distance themselves from their past impiety. So when there's this reservoir of bijam or kutam within the heart, it's very difficult to chant attentively. It's very difficult to, you know, Prabhupada in this verse, Tesham Tvanta Gatam Papam, says that one who has desire and hate, you know, this is the sequel to the Ichadvesham verse, he can't really understand the Lord's appearance. He sees the Lord assuming a material body. Oh my gosh, we've run out of time. It's time for darshan. That's the concept. I'm sorry I didn't leave time for, this is an exciting subject matter for me. So I guess we just have to end here, and good luck. I hope, actually, when you come to the Nishta platform, this is when Kleshagni becomes fully manifest. Okay, so I hope each of you get there. I hope I get there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.